Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton here with you today. You are in for a real treat. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast founder with Emily Heath, Miss Emily Rudman. How are you?
I am good. I am as well as can be, is what I've been saying to a lot of people.
Now, what prompts that coming? Are you finding this to be a particularly challenging time right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think for everyone, it definitely is. On top of it being, you know, a new mom, my daughter just turned 9 months old. So that's definitely added some other layers of challenge, but also, you know, trying to look for the silver lining as well.
So for those of you listeners who may be listening to this in 2021 or 2022, Emily Rudman and I are having this conversation right now, not in a Business Radio X studio even. I'm operating from a home studio, a studio set up in my home. This is a virtual interview, and we are neck deep right in the middle of the whole COVID-19 thing. Plus, there's plenty of racial tension and social unrest going on out there. So there's a lot going on out there. And yet, there are the Emily Rudmans of the world that are out there just hammering it out and trying to serve folks day in, day out. And that's where I'd like to start. Emily, can you give us a little bit of an overview of your organization? What exactly are you out there trying to do for people?
Yeah, I think, you know, first and foremost, we have always wanted to be more than just a brand. So I have a luxury, clean, beauty, and lifestyle brand. But we've always tried to have a more cultural community aspect to that. And to that effect, we've always kind of had give back nonprofits and charities that we've worked with. And we've always included very diverse marketing. So in terms of what we're trying to provide to people, I think it is quality products, transparency, and luxury, but I like to call it luxury with integrity.
So was the path, the domain, the area that interested you, was it always this kind of clean and beauty world, or what is your backstory?
Yeah, I mean, so I am a little bit of an odd one in that at a very young age, I knew I wanted to have my own brand and a beauty brand. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but when I was really young, I was a self-taught artist. And I think I was around like 5 or 6, and my father asked me what I wanted to do or what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I said, well, I'd like to be an artist, but artists aren't famous or don't make any money until after they're dead. So I guess I'll have to do something else. And it's funny when you hear that coming from a young child, but I guess I was very self-aware of, how the America dream works, and it is challenging. I always wanted to have a beauty brand, and I actually worked towards that, pretty much my whole life through education. It was something I always thought about. I got into makeup artistry as I got older. I went to school and I studied economics. I worked at beauty brands. I went to makeup school, hair school, got my business degree. All of it was to start my own brand.
Well, I guess that's one of the things that struck me. I don't know if odd is the right word, but I was a little bit surprised that, as I understand it, you got your MBA at Columbia University. And I guess you felt like that was an important piece of the puzzle to get that business education. What was the driver for that?
You know, I think that a lot of people nowadays will say that it is much easier to start a brand, but it's much harder to scale a brand. And they're right. Mm. I mean, you have a lot more access to platforms that allow you to facilitate a brand launch. But I think that for me, I knew very early on that if I wanted to do this and do this well, that at some point I would have to be talking about the brand, selling the brand, possibly talking to investors. And for that, you really need to have a great business understanding. Do you need to go to business school? No, you can definitely learn this on your own. But business school is not just about the education piece. It's also about the network piece. So the people that I met, my classmates, are some of my, you know, closest friends, best advisors, and have, you know, facilitated a lot of job opportunities for me during and post school, and then also have referred amazing people to me. So, you know, it has more of a an opportunity for people than one might think.
And you've chosen, as you have scaled this brand, you didn't pick one or the other. You're sort of one of these both and people. You have a full blown, I don't know, e-commerce digital kind of strategy, but you also have very good relationships with some brick and mortar organizations that you wholesale into. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we have started to really curate ourselves into some high-level brick and mortar. We obviously have a little bit of a pause and a re-strategy right now, given the current pandemic. But I do think that, you know, beauty has done well during this time. And I think it's proven to do well in kind of economic unrest and downturns. So I feel as if we will have a really robust distribution, you know, even after this.
So if you don't mind sharing, what are some of the pivots or shifts in thinking or planning that you've chosen to make as a result of this current COVID-19 kind of challenge that we're facing?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have been saying that this current situation has kind of accelerated things that were already happening in the retail environment, as well as for some brands. So for us, you know, some of our pain points have been a lot of like upfront costs for inventory and just production delays working with manufacturers because we're so small. So we're now actually trying to solve some of those things, you know, bootstrapping as we've continued to always do. And we're actually pivoting to doing some product test outs by hand making some of those products ourselves. So I think we've invested a lot of time into developing a really high end brand that people do trust. And we hope to bring them high quality handmade products that they can use at home. A lot of beauty products these days can be handmade. Actually, a lot of them are handmade. I will say that the first iteration of our products, we had a delay with production. So I ended up hand filling the first 800 pieces of our product that we sold.
The glamorous life of the chief executive officer. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It's a chief everything officer is what I like to call it.
I'm getting this picture of pizza and the beer in the back corner and 7 or 8, 10 or 12 of your closest friends in your flat, you know, and you're all filling these bottles.
Yep. That was pretty much it. We ordered our white gloves and yeah, it was like a little procession line. I was in charge of pouring the nail polish because I didn't want anyone else to do that. But yeah, it was, I know a lot more about filling than I ever thought I ever would.
I love it. So what have you learned over the years that you might be willing to share with us and our listeners about this whole idea of recruiting and developing and retaining really good quality talent?
I think that it is one of the biggest pain points, and people say this all the time when it comes to startups or any company. It really, really is a major player. For me, I think that I've been really lucky in terms of my network and strength of network. And I think that, you know, we've been really good about recruiting great, wonderful people. I like to start it off with a very informal conversation, kind of not make it too scary or intimidating for them. And then I think, you know, in terms of retaining someone, I think that really has to do with culture. I think that I had kind of a negative experience at a previous job where, you know, that kind of impacted a lot of what I knew I did not want to do when I would manage people or become a leader. And then I had a great experience at a previous job where the founder really cultivated a sense of culture, you know, where he had things like team outings and free meals and just little things like that that really showed his appreciation. I think that for me, building a company culture is almost as important, if not more important, than the products that we're producing.
You may not have an answer for this, but I suspect there are people in your circle who's from time to time who are not entrepreneurs, who are not running their own companies, who have expressed an interest in maybe doing something like that someday. But my question is, what misconceptions, if any, do you think maybe the first-time entrepreneur or even the aspirational entrepreneur, misconceptions or wrong ideas about this life or this lifestyle that maybe we could reduce the friction and shrink the timeline, save them a few headaches?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, but I think having flexibility and more time. Yes, you will have flexibility, but more time? Well, yes, but at the same time, no, because you're doing so much. The job really never ends. And I think when it's your own company, it's your baby. So you're constantly thinking about it, even when you're not working. So it definitely becomes a lot more of your life than you ever would have imagined. I think that people sometimes think they can go at it alone. I think it's very lonely and it's very difficult, and you always are going to need help. And I think that whatever you think you're going to have to spend in your projections for financials, don't times it by 2 or 4, like they say, times it by at least 10 to 20.
Whoa.
Because the way things are right now, there's a lot of upfront costs, and customer acquisition costs, especially in the digital space, are just going up and up and up and up and up. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of companies who are going under because they just have not been able to increase their customer lifetime value or decrease their customer acquisition costs over time. As soon as they stop marketing to them, they lose the customer. And that's not a sustainable business model.
And all of that said, it can be an incredibly rewarding way to invest your life and your skills and your heart. What are you finding the most rewarding right now about your work?
I think just the ability to create. There are times when I question whether or not I want to continue doing this, and I think about going back to corporate, and it makes me very sad. So I think the fact that I'm able to create, the fact that I'm able to work with other creatives and just develop interesting ideas and concepts and innovations, that to me is really enjoyable. Just the ideation part, the logistics part is definitely more difficult, but even just the learning part, I've, you know, had a lot of education under my belt. And I think that just by nature, I love learning. Right now I'm learning how to make my own soap. I'm learning how to make candles by hand from, you know, experts. And I find it just really fascinating to continue my own growth and education, and also to pass that on to other people when and if I can.
So you mentioned soap and candles. And before we wrap, I did want to ask you, what's next for you? And I'm really thinking more sort of short term, 6-12 months. Where are you going to be putting your energy in the next, you know, 6 months to a year, you think?
So we're actually using this time right now to really re-strategize our content and aesthetic, and then build up a lot of content for all of our platforms. So building up our blog, possibly launching a podcast. We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, focusing on our inventory and product launches and distribution channels and kind of refiguring that. So I think, you know, definitely the marketing piece, but the marketing is highly connected to the sales piece and the inventory piece. We can't sell without inventory, and without inventory, we can't, you know, so it's kind of goes chicken and the egg.
Well, it's interesting that you are going to incorporate what I would characterize as a content strategy. That's one of the ways that you're going to continue to serve your group, right? Your tribe.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have been talking about this, that building a community and building a personal, emotional relationship with your consumer is more important, especially now, more than ever. And I think that there's a lot of things that we've always wanted to do, a lot of things that we know that we have to do, but it's just more about a bandwidth issue for us as a small team. So I feel like now that we kind of can take a pause a little bit and rethink it, that really providing useful content, interesting content for our consumers and potential consumers is really important, because at the end of the day, you know, we're going to be in people's homes and we want to create value to them, not just sell them.
Well, I hope you choose to do the podcast. I'm going to follow your blog regardless, but I sure hope you choose to do the podcast, because I just, based on this conversation today, I think these would be very interesting conversations to sort of eavesdrop into.
Well, I would love to have you as a guest when I do.
All right. You got it. That sounds like fun. If our listeners would like to get in touch with you or someone on your team, learn more, or maybe just go to the website and start tapping into the content already available, what are the best coordinates? What's the best way to get them connected with you guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, for our website, it's emilyheath.com. It's EmilyHeath.com. And for me, if they want to contact me, my information is actually on the Instagram. They can direct contact or call me. If they want my personal email, I'm happy to give that too. It's emily.rudman@gmail.com.
Well, Emily, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
And thank you for having me too, Stone.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for our guest today, Emily Rudman, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.